What is up, my love, and welcome back to the 1% Woman podcast. Today is a really special episode because today I am joined with a beautiful guest named Drew. Drew is the founder of Gem Life and Bar, one of the very first zero-proof bottle shops and bars in the country. Drew has been in the beauty, wellness, and media space for over 15 years now. She is an autoimmune warrior. She is a mom. She is a mother of four. She's been featured in Vogue and Forbes, Wine Enthusiast, ABC, and so much more. I am so excited for you guys to get all the juice out of today's conversation because we talk all about our relationship with alcohol. Drew shares her journey with being sober, including the experiences that she had to go through while exploring the sober lifestyle, the barriers that she faced, and the benefits that she has gained. Drew also peels back the curtain and shares the behind the scenes on how she started her business, all of the things that she has had to learn how to navigate in the product-based business world, and also while owning her own storefront. She gives tips and tricks to anyone who has this on her vision board while also kind of sharing her experience with how her identity has evolved throughout her entrepreneurship journey and the ways that she has learned how to prioritize herself while doing it all. I'm really, really, really excited for you guys to listen to today's episode. So without further ado, let's just dive right in. Hello, Drew, and welcome to the 1% Woman podcast. I'm so excited to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I like to start off every episode. Obviously, I've already introduced you, given like the formal lowdown, but really just give you the opportunity in your own words to introduce yourself, what you do, and more importantly, why you do it. Give us a little bit of your story, because I know that there's so much there.
Yeah. Well, I've lived like 20 lives, but we'll talk about this current one. My name is Drew Davis. I'm the founder of Gem Life and Bar, which is one of the country's first zero-proof bottle shops and like tasting lounge and pop-up bars. And what we do is we create like a safe space where you can navigate like your drinking, but also have really fun alternatives. So I'm always like sober is the new sexy. And on top of that, I co-created an event that we take around the country. It's like almost like a sober festival where you can indulge and have fun. Just there will be no alcohol there. So you really get to tap into that mindfulness and connecting. And then I also coach other human beings who would like to do the same thing as me, is open a space in the sober sobriety or like bottle shops, bars. So there's a lot to me, but the main thing is Gem and just normalizing not drinking for whatever reason it is in our culture.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. Why? I mean, I'm someone who's definitely on the sober curious side. I don't even know the last time I drank, probably like last year at some point. But what kind of got you into the sober curious lifestyle? What like pushed you to pursue that?
Yeah, so you know, I feel like all of our painful moments turn into our purpose. So unfortunately, in April of 2020, I have autoimmune diseases. So I have like lupus, I have vasculitis. So I've kind of suffered with pain and, for my whole life, pretty much. And so, but April of 2020, I was just feeling terrible. And I was like, you know what, something's wrong. And then eventually I was like, I have to go to the emergency room, even though I didn't want to, because it was like COVID and all that. Mm-hmm. Turns out my pancreas stopped working. And so I stayed in the hospital for about a week. And thank God that I didn't have to have it like removed. We were able to like treat it, with medicine and rest and hydration and like the steps that they take. So I'm really thankful that I didn't have to have any of it removed. But part of the care process was like, you have to remove alcohol, certain foods, like, you know, you have to have a new workout like routine. Like I couldn't do hardcore workouts. It had to be like yoga. So my whole life was like boot camp, you know, and the bar, like, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like I would go to boot camp and then I go to happy hour. So a lot of my favorite things were like cut out, and I'm a foodie. So I love food. So I was like, this is easy. Like it's life or death. Like my pancreas doesn't work. Like I don't, you know, it's a life or death situation, but I had a hard time not drinking. And I realized that like I had a toxic relationship with it. And I grew up in a household that like, you know, there's a lot of drinking. And I really just thought it was normal that you drink all the time. Like you drink when you're sad, when you're happy, when friends come over, at funerals, at weddings. Like, I just thought that was normal. But also, I also was never truly happy either. I think back to like my mental health and I was like, yeah, it was fun, but like only when I was like drinking or doing things, like, but I was really kind of a sad human the next day. So yeah, I was like, you know what? It's time to do some shadow work. It's time to do some inner child healing. And the birth of Gem came from that. Like, so it came from like, okay, why do you feel like you have to have the substance to make you a better person, or like to make you have fun, or like, you know? So I started to tap into that and really nourish myself. And then I started meeting all these people who didn't drink, or like who couldn't drink, or who struggle with drinking. And I was like, there's such a gap in the market for people. Like you said, you haven't had a drink in a year, but like, I'm sure now it's a little bit more popular, but I'm sure like going out, there's not tons of cool choices for people who don't drink. You know, there's like water or soda. And if you're wellness conscious, you're like, I don't want soda. So I was like, I want to create a space that like brings people together, that we can still dress up and be cute and like with our girlfriends, or you can come in with your like, you know, your spouse or your friend and sit down and like have a fun drink that nourishes your body and your soul and doesn't take away.
Oh my gosh, I love that so much because I can tell you, like you said, I haven't drank all year, but like I've chosen not to go out all year because I didn't want to have to. I didn't feel like I fit in. I didn't feel like I had something there. And I think personally, that's been for me like my real challenge with my relationship with alcohol is it's been quite a tricky one. And I think for a long time in high school and through college, like I used alcohol as like this thing that would like allow me to like let my walls down. And as long as I was drunk or tipsy, then I was like almost like more fully expressing myself. Like I was like, thought I was more fun and whatever. I thought I was being more myself, but then like not drinking, like drinking is not who I am. I'm like a conscious wellness, want to take care of myself person. So I was like, okay, well, drinking to be more myself is not actually being more myself. It's not that at all. How can I learn how to let my walls down without needing to rely on the substance of alcohol to do that? And so that's really been my journey right now is like, don't give in to drinking and learn how to let your walls down without doing that. I often find that like when I would be in situations where there was drinking was the norm, my walls almost would go up higher because I felt like, oh my gosh, I don't belong here, or I felt judged for not drinking. So it's definitely been like a challenge and a conversation I have with like a lot of people is like how to navigate this like sober curious lifestyle. Yeah, and like you said, it is becoming more of the norm now, which is awesome. But yeah, what do you feel like were some of your biggest barriers to being able to embark on the sober curious lifestyle for yourself?
I mean, I agree. Well, I think I was, in a way, I was lucky because it was COVID, so I couldn't go out. So for me, like but I was also in my house, like navigating it by myself, which was pretty lonely, but I think it's what I needed to kind of figure out, like, you know, because I remember my, like the neighbors and stuff, like we had like a barbecue in the backyard for my daughter's birthday and people had beer and stuff. And I went upstairs and this was like a couple weeks after like I got out of the hospital, and I was like crying on the floor, just like hysterically crying, just so sad. And my husband was like, what are you doing? He like couldn't find me. He was like, what are you doing? I was like, I can't do this. Like, I don't know how to, I don't know who I am. I don't know who I am without alcohol. And that was a huge problem. And I was like, it's like that best friend that is like always there for you, but like kind of wants the worst for you. And I'm sure we've all had that relationship. Like, you're like, hold on, this friend is like my best friend, but kind of my biggest hater. And that's how I felt about alcohol. I was like, I have to break up with alcohol. And I have to like process this, and I have to be so confident with who I am that when I go out, if alcohol's around me, like I don't even feel fazed by it because I'm so confident and like with who I am. So that took some time. I mean, it wasn't easy. It took me like a year of like kind of working through it. But the benefits, I feel like, of not drinking outweigh the drinking. Like for me to wake up without a hangover in almost 4 years has been a true blessing. And like I'm like older, I'm almost 40, so like the hangovers, they don't get easier, let me just tell
No.
y'all. And like I had to deal with the traumatic experiences that I actually the alcohol caused. You know, a lot of times you blame it on the drinks, but really like no, that was not okay for that to happen. And like you have to process it and grieve and know that it wasn't your fault, and that like alcohol is a highly addictive substance that like literally like makes your brain like shut off. So I had to like come to terms with that stuff. But then I started finding fun drinks. Like that was another thing for me, is like always being prepared and having like fun drinks that I could like bring with me to the party, that so I didn't feel so like out, like I guess like, you know, I didn't feel like such like an outsider, because I'm like, I know it sounds so silly, like, and like what you just said, it sounds like when I say it, I'm like, it sounds silly to be like, I don't feel included. But like when people are drinking and you're not, it's quite an experience.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't realize it until I stopped drinking, but I was like, wow, this is quite the experience. And I don't know if I love it as much going out and being the only one sober, unless I do have like a drink with me or like something that makes me feel relaxed, like an herbal infused beverage. So that's been like something in my toolkit, is to always have like a fun drink that makes me feel kind of relaxed when I'm around people, because it is hard. And you are like, I'm sure you're like navigating sober career. Sometimes you're like, I'm just gonna have a drink because it's the easiest thing to do.
Yeah,
So,
a lot of times I'll just hold one. I'll be like, I'm just gonna hold one because I don't want to have the worst part for me is the question, the questioning, like people asking me like why I'm not drinking, or like, yeah, kind of like that. I don't want to say it's like peer pressure, but it's like I don't genuinely want to drink. I don't want to do this. It's like other people pressuring me to want to or to need to.
I always say it's like, if you were doing meth and you quit meth, everybody would congratulate you. You know, they'd be like, oh my God, I'm so glad you're not on drugs anymore. You know what I mean? But if you say you're quitting alcohol, you get questioned. But alcohol is more addictive than meth. And that's like what was wild to me. You know, with our society, it's just so ingrained in our society, but it also is so deadly and so toxic for us. And I don't like to shame anybody either for drinking. Do you know what I mean? Like, if that's your choice, that's your
No.
choice. But like, please don't make me feel some type of way for not drinking.
Yeah, I agree. Like my whole family drinks. It's like a normal thing, and again, I'm not one to like never take a drink. But yeah, I think this like identity piece is something that I would love to really dive into. So, what were some of the next steps that you took to kind of refind your identity after giving up drinking?
I mean, I did a lot of journaling first, and shout out, let's give shout out to Danielle Massey. So I found her on my journey. And I did a lot of journaling and just kind of finding out like what were some of my, you know, some of the things I enjoyed, some of the things I didn't enjoy, some of the things that like, you know, were stuck in me, that were like not allowing me to feel happiness. And so those were the things I kind of started to dive into and kind of getting to know myself. And journaling was big for me. A lot of people, I tried to meditate. And I feel like journaling is my form of meditation. I do meditate now, but in the beginning, there was just so much that I was like, I'm not doing it right. Or, you know, you think you're not. So journaling, I would just sit there and just write everything out. But then I started doing things that like I used to enjoy, like listening to certain music and singing and dancing and going on walks. And I started running every day and like challenged myself to see like how far I could run. Things that I just wasn't doing. I wasn't taking care of my mind and body when I was like working my, like, excuse my language, my ass off. Like for another company, I was like working all day long, and then I'd come home and have drinks to unwind because I'd be so overwhelmed and anxious. So like really just slowing down. Like I really slowed down. I was like not doing anything. I'm gonna let my body wake up when it wakes up. I'm gonna do yoga. I'm gonna walk around the neighborhood and like pick flowers. I'm gonna listen to music and sing at the top of my lungs. And like started finding hobbies I really enjoyed again. Like I used to love to do like reading like tarot cards and it, you know, like oracle cards. And so I started buying those and researching that and just like kind of getting back into stuff that I used to enjoy before like alcohol really came into my life. Because that became my biggest hobby, was like drinking.
And I think that's how it is for a lot of people. And then it's like, what is life without it? I can relate to this like identity crisis. This is how I felt when I gave up like bodybuilding. And like, it sounds so weird that like you attach your identity to something like alcohol or something like, fitness like slash bodybuilding. But it was really like, okay, who am I if I'm not like the person who walks in the room as like this like fit, like goddess model. Like that's literally how I thought everyone saw me, and that's how I identified myself. And so, yeah, it really exploring other things that you enjoy outside of that. There are so many things is I think the best way to go about that. Now, I want to ask you a little bit, if you don't mind opening up, about how your relationships kind of shifted. I think that for me has been a big barrier to being a sober curious or just not drinking. And I think for a lot of people, it's like, how are my relationships, like, are people not going, like, am I going to lose my relationships that I have now? So what was that like for you?
So yeah, I did lose a lot of relationships or friendships I thought were like
Yeah.
really good friendships. They started to fade away, and it's like my husband and I laugh, like we don't get invited to Halloween parties anymore. We don't get invited to Christmas parties. And I'm like, I think because people think, because I'm like, and I'm a very open about my not drinking. I think they feel like I'm don't want to be there, or like they're either triggered. Sometimes I find that they're triggered by it. So a lot of people's reaction, and you know this, is like something within themselves, not that something we do to them. And so sometimes when I say I'm not drinking, like people will be like, I only had two drinks tonight, and like come and tell me. And I'm like, I am not the sober police. Like you don't have to like feel uncomfortable around me. I'm having a really good time with my like mocktail, and I'm having a really good time because I'm having good conversations, but I feel like it triggers people. And so some of my friendships that were kind of around like drinking and like happy hours and like meeting after work, those went away instantly. And like it was kind of sad at first, but then I realized it's like they weren't really my, like those friendships weren't really my friendships that like I needed in my life. They were there and they weren't really nourishing me. They're probably part of the problem. And that was hard. So I felt very alone. But like my husband is like my true rock, because he was never a big drinker, but he quit drinking with me. And I think him and I, like my relationship, like navigating that was huge, because we've met at like out at a bar, like at a party. So like our alcohol and like going out has always been a part of our relationship. So like I don't know how to explain it the best way, but it's like almost starting a relationship over again without alcohol, and like learning how to communicate properly, learning how to deal with things. But he was so supportive, and that was like such a beautiful thing for me, is like we connected so much deeper in our marriage, and we've been together for 13 years. So, you know, I mean, that was like 4 years, if 3.5 years ago, is like, then this is a whole new step, and like we're evolving together. So that was beautiful. But like, also something that people don't talk about a lot is like sober sex. And a lot of people feel like that in like dating, they feel like they have to have drinks to go out and date and have sex and things like that. And listen, like I was young once, like that's part of the routine. But like also like with my husband, like I was like, okay, navigating this sober is actually really cool. But like
Yeah.
people don't talk about that stuff, because alcohol, like, you know, in relationships, like I have a lot of friends who don't want to drink, but they're dating, and they're like, well, we went out and had drinks because I'd like that was the only thing to do. And I'm like, but she's like, you know, a few of my friends are like, but I didn't want to drink, but that was like the only way I felt comfortable going on the first date. And I'm like, it kind of breaks my heart that we have the society that we're so, like you said, shielded. And the only way we can like drop our boundaries is by having a drink, or connecting by having a drink, when in reality you're not connecting like you thought you were.
Yeah, I love that you bring that up, because I truly do believe that, like, when you take those substances out of the picture, like, it forces you. And this is like the practice that I'm actively doing, is like forcing myself to let down those walls, like, naturally. And I think it does require like a lot of inner work, a lot of healing your relationship with yourself. So how do you feel like your relationship with yourself has shifted and changed since being sober?
Yeah, I always say, like, I tell people, like, I was kind of a miserable person, as much as I didn't realize it. Like, I was kind of negative, angry, complained a lot, like, just harbored all those feelings of like trauma, childhood trauma. And like, they were so stuck in my body. So they were just made me like a nasty person. Like, if somebody cut me off, like, I would be the person to like probably follow them home. You know what I mean? Like, I was angry. And then I know that sounds crazy, but I look back, I was like, God, I was so angry, and just like kind of like just like complained a lot, and just was like not happy. And I didn't think that until I removed the alcohol. But now I'm like, I fell back in love with myself, and like, you know, learning to love the parts of myself that I didn't love before. And yeah, that's difficult every day. Do you know what I mean? I think we all have that. Like, there's just things like, you know, that we all have with ourselves that we have to work on every day to love ourselves. But like really just enjoying myself, and like, okay, Drew, you're fine. You're perfect without these things. And like, you know, you do the best you can. Like, I give myself grace. I give others grace. I find, you know, that I just lead with love more. And I think in all I do, like, I'm even people who hurt me, I'm like, let me just like lead with love and understanding. And I think that that was huge for me. And I count my blessings more than I complain. You know, I have like a gratitude list. Try to write three things I'm grateful for down every day. Because I am so grateful. Like, I'm so grateful I'm alive. I'm grateful I'm here for my children. I'm grateful that I'm changing the relationships with my family, that like, and my kids, and like they're seeing this better version of me. So then hopefully they can take that into the world with them. So yeah, I mean, we all struggle. I mean, I can't lie and say that like every day is perfect. I mean, I'm an entrepreneur. So like 3 days ago, I might've cried on the way home because I'm like, this is hard. But I allowed myself to cry. And I think that's the thing. I allow myself to feel my feelings. When alcohol, like the second I had a feeling, I would drink to numb it. Yeah. I was like, oh, I don't want to be sad, so I'm going to drink. But then it would come out. It would either like be pushed further down or it'd come out really sideways and turn into another disaster that I had to, you know, deal with. So it's almost, my friend wrote a book called Chaos to Clarity about her chaotic life with drinking to like clarity without drinking. That's the perfect way to put it. Like, oh, I went from like chaotic life to like more clarity and like peace.
Yeah, I feel like all that chaos comes when we distract ourselves from what's actually going on within. And when you're able to actually like look at what's going on within and heal it and work through it with a lot of like self-compassion and love and holding space. I love that you brought up that not only has this work really done a lot with like learning how to love yourself, but through that also learning how to love others and be more compassionate with others and more patient with others. I think that that's something that's been huge for me, is like being able to learn how to love the pieces and parts of myself that were flaws or imperfections or mistakes allows me to have that same exact empathy for other people who maybe are inflicting or triggering to different things inside of me. I'm like, oh, I can see where or why they're doing that or where they're coming from, and not take everything like personally as needing to make it mean something about me.
Yeah, I know. I think most of us live in a victim mentality until we can process things. Like I used to always be, why me, why me, why me? Well, everything that we do and say is puts out in the universe. So if you keep saying, why me, and you're this victim and you're angry, like that's all you're going to get back.
Yeah.
And, you know, but I was too blind to see that when I was drinking. So then I was like, okay, all the energy I put out, the intentions I put out, hopefully come back to me.
Mm-hmm.
In a positive manner. Once I like kind of changed my frame of thinking.
Yeah. And I think it's so powerful, like being in this sober state while being an entrepreneur. Cause like you said, entrepreneurship is going to literally mirror back every single one of those parts, every single one of those shadow parts, every single one of those emotions is always going to be triggered within you as an entrepreneur. And the fact that you have the tools and you've already done a lot of this like inner, like self-development work prior to diving headfirst into entrepreneurship, you have the tools to work through them. You know how to work through them instead of going and numbing and then making it 10 times worse by doing so.
Yeah, you're so right. I mean, I'm 3.5 years into entrepreneurship because I pretty much got sober and then launched my business a couple months later. Entrepreneurship will peel back the layers. Like, and just like, I mean, it's just you a lot of times and it can be lonely. So learning to deal with that, like if I was drinking, I always say like, I would never have my business if I was drinking because the money that I use for alcohol and partying, I actually use to open a business, but like, I don't think I could function on a high level. So like, I always see all these like big entrepreneurs or billionaires or millionaires, they don't drink. And I'm like, I get it because you cannot function at a high level and run like, you know, a high end business if you're drinking all the time. And so like, I'm so thankful, but I'm also thankful for my sobriety. Cause like, I wouldn't meet people like you, like, you know, my path would be so much different. And I'm like, I keep meeting all these amazing people and the universe keeps bringing really cool people in my life because I'm sober.
Yeah.
So like, I feel like that's like another cool part about being an entrepreneur and being sober is like, it's taking me and like meeting people that I would never, and like building relationships with people that I would have never known if I didn't take this path.
Yeah, that's awesome. So let's dive a little bit deeper into that entrepreneurial path, because I would love to pick your brain a little bit about running a product-based business. I've been in tons and tons of business masterminds with other service providers. I've been a service provider myself, obviously. But what has your experience been like running a product-based business? And do you have anything that you could share or give to anyone listening who's like thinking about starting a product-based business?
Yeah. So I come from like PR and marketing. So I come from like a service based and like, but I also helped market product, which is so different than actually running a product based business. Like me being on the other end, like doing the social strategies and like doing the e-commerce on the back end was way different than actually being in it and being like a buyer, like looking at the margins. What I can say is retail is hard right now, depending on what you sell, because of the margins that, you know, because of a lot of the manufacturing. So if you are like, I also believe it's 100% doable. It's just, I have to be honest, for me, it's a little bit difficult because I'm in a growing industry. So the sober industry really just kicked off a couple of years ago. So all these brands and products are just launching the same time I am. So the problem is they're doing like smaller production runs. So they don't get the good costs, you know, like they normally would if you're doing a bigger production run. So like if I'm paying, like, and I'm very open, like if I am buying a bottle, a can for $4 from them, because they didn't do a big production run, I have to sell it for $8. And so I'm like, a lot of people, you know, then, you know, is the wholesale price $8? It could be $6.99. So if I buy it for $4 and it's $6.99, I'm only making $2 off of that.
Right.
Then you've got to pay taxes and you have to pay employees. So your margins are like 20 to 30%. I'd say 30% if you're successful. So you have to make sure, I think it's like, you're doing a really good job on like educating people why. You have to find products that I feel like right now I'm learning to find products with really good margins, or you have to find the brands that people love and buy a lot of it to get the cheaper, cost. So then you can make more. So those are like some things that I've nabbed. Like, I didn't know this stuff. Like, I was like, I'm just going to help people by serving alternative beverages, not knowing that like, if I ordered this for 19 and I can only sell it for 22, like I'm only making $2, like that's not going to pay my bills. So that, I mean, and like, listen, I would love to do this for free. Like I tell people all the time, I might create a nonprofit, like, because I would love to help people. Like, 'cause that's just truly my mission, is to help people liberate themselves from alcohol or from like the trauma. But you know, in today's world, we have to make money to survive.
Right.
And we also, and like on the other end, like I like nice things. I like to go on vacation. I like nice things. So I want to have a life that provides that for me. So it's like that catch 22, you know? So I think that that's a big thing. You need to find out, like, if you're going to open a retail business, like look at your product, look at the margins, and then look at shipping. So shipping is super expensive in today's world. So that's another thing that I didn't realize. So I ship, I have a lot of product just hanging out near me. Like bottles are expensive to ship. So, you know, I'll order from a brand like $400 worth of product, and 200 of it can be shipping, or 200 more could be shipping. So I'm ordering a product and paying $200 in shipping. So I have to build that into the cost now. So everybody wonders why everything costs so much. You know, everybody talks about that, I'm sure, like, it's so expensive to live, because everything is like, you know what I mean? Like if a brand, like a small brand like me, has to bring it in, like I have to cover all these costs, and then I have to charge you like more than I want to, but that's the only way. So I would always look at like what you're shipping. So like for me, like shipping these products, like I just did an order to California because we have an online site too that we ship all over the US. But like that cost me $30 to ship. And I only charge $10 just flat fee for people, because I want this to be affordable. So on that end, like I'm going to eat some of that cost.
Yeah.
So it's like, these are the things you have to look at before you open a business. If I open another business, or if I open my own product line, it'll probably be something small and like, more of a concentrate form for drinks that people can, I can ship easier, and it's easier to manufacture because it's like smaller bottles. I don't manufacture any of this stuff right now. I just curate it all. But if I was going to go that route, I think the other thing is staying super present on social media. And I think you could like, you know, contest to that being in the service industry, but like education, why they should shop from you, like be top of mind, because we live in such a fast pace that like I even do it. I'm like, oh, I want to buy that product. And I keep scrolling on like TikTok or Instagram. And I'm like, where was that store? Who had that product? And then I might Google it and order from the wrong person. So like, make sure that you stay top of mind. Like when people think non-alcoholic drinks in like Philly, Jersey, like my goal is for them to think of me.
Yeah. And I think you're thriving at that.
Thanks. And I'm like, it's just staying really consistent. I mean, I'd like to be, you know, national, global, and like that's the goal, but like right now I'm like, okay, stay top of mind and like hit your local target and local community, and then you just start growing from that.
Yeah. So you have a brick and mortar.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about that. What is that like, brick and mortar?
So I used to run other people's businesses basically, and I thought I was, you know, I thought it was easier than it was. And I had their credit cards, so things are easier to swipe. But I've learned that it is a lot. Like you have to, that's what I'm talking about. When you're doing a product-based business, still, like, you have to think about, okay, like, here's my rent, here's my overhead, here's my, like, I have to have all these other things paid before I even profit. And then you have to have employees if you're not going to be there all the time. And for me, like, I have to start staffing it because I'm very thankful. I had a lot of cool opportunities that, but they're taking me away from the store. So I was like, and I opened three locations in like 2 years, like actually brick and mortars. And then that was a big learning lesson that people don't talk about. Like, I use almost all of our money. I'd like to open them all. And then the overhead was just more than the income. And I was like, we're going to drown. Like, I will lose my business. And I don't think I've really ever shared that with many people, but like, I was like, I have to get rid of one of these locations because it's not producing enough. And like, the business will go under. And so I had to make a really quick, I mean, I'd like to think smart business decision to like tap out of like brick and mortars and restructure how I do things. So I have the one main one. I have my online site. I got rid of one brick and mortar. And then I'm actually looking at, I have one other location, but it's inside of a wellness studio. So I'm not paying for the full rent. It's inside of a yoga wellness. So I'm really catering to my clientele. So I'm kind of restructuring my business. Like, maybe I just need to go into spaces who have like-minded people who shop with me. And then I don't have to have this whole location to myself. And then I'm also doing dry vibes, which I think we talked about before we jumped on the call, is actually hosting these experiences like across the country where hopefully, you know, they end up generating income for me. And it's not like, yeah, I rent a space for the day, not for the year, you know? So I'm looking at different ways to like, to just create revenue without having so much overhead.
Yeah, I think that's like a really good like key takeaway here is minimizing your overhead. And I think whether you are a product-based business, a brick and mortar, or honestly, we see this in the service in space a lot, is like you're just racking up your overhead and that is minimizing your profit margin. Something that I had to learn as a brand new entrepreneur too. I'm like, starting making all this money. I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll do this, I'll do this. And then how do I know? I'm like, oh my gosh, like five figures deep in expenses. And I'm like, okay, what am I doing here? I can like really cut a lot of them. Fortunate enough in the service space, I can cut a lot of them. Whereas in the product space or in brick and mortar, a lot of them aren't optional. So awesome. And I think just like the really cool part about what you're doing is just having the opportunity to create more community with the people who are experiencing your product as well. And I think that that's really, really cool, is being able to just like make those connections and create that community, whether it's through the brick and mortars or through like Dry Vibes and doing those like events that I think are just awesome.
Thank you. I just want to create like a fun space that just doesn't have to include alcohol.
Awesome. Well, I know that we met at the Selfish Philly concert, and at that concert we were talk or concert conference, we were talking a lot about taking care of yourself first as an entrepreneur, and you have obviously shared about all of the things that you have that you're doing on your plate. Also, on top of that, being a mama for, being a wife, I see you traveling, doing all the things. So what are some of the things that you do to take care of yourself as an entrepreneur and make yourself a priority?
So I was doing a really good job in the beginning, and then like I think when I opened all the locations, I completely stopped taking care of myself and like started to find like mentally and like kind of getting depressed. And I'm not that's really never been me, like to feel like, you know, but I was like sad a lot, and I'm like, okay, you're like neglecting yourself. Your body is like, help me. So I make it a priority to go like work out like 3 to 4 times a week. I was huge in working out before. Even when I drank, I was big into like fitness. But I was like, oh, I got to do this for the business instead. And like, I started to let the business run me and not me run the business.
Oh, I
And
love
I
that.
was like, that's a big thing I think that a lot of entrepreneurs do. Because where it's like, we don't work for other people. So if we don't make the money doesn't come in. Do you know what I mean? Like, we don't get to clock into a 9 to 5 and get paid regardless of what we do at that time. Like, we have to make it work. So I was like started to kind of obsess over that, and that's not healthy. So I try to get up and I go to Pilates like 3 to 4 days a week now. I try to like at least 1 to 2 times a week go on a date with I mean, spend time with my kids, like 1 to 2 times a month go on a date with my husband. I know that doesn't sound like a lot, but right now it's, you know, busy season 2. So I'm like, I will schedule a night off. I'll find an employee to work a shift. I just started doing this. I took my work email off of my phone.
Ooh.
I know it could be a dangerous game to play, but I obviously have social media on my phone because it's like where we do social media from. But I took my work email off because I was like between checking social, checking my work email, like trying to like talk and text and email while driving. I'm like, this is unsafe. This is stressing you out. So people can get your response when you're on your computer, and that's usually like in the morning for a couple hours, and then in the afternoon, and then like a couple hours before bed. Like I have it kind of broken out like that. So that was a big form of self-care for me because I live in a world that everything's urgent in my head, and you know what I mean. Like I'm always like, oh, I got to get back to them right now, and I'm like, you know, it's not worth your life driving and trying to talk and text. Like,
Yeah.
so that was something for me that I was like, let me take that off my phone. So that was a big form of self-care, and then I am big on vacations. So I know it sounds probably cliche, but like every quarter I plan, like even if it's 2 to 3 days or if it's a week long, like that's like what I kind of work for. And then I'm like, this is my time to like indulge in self. And that's what works for me.
Yeah, that's awesome. That is a huge boundary to set of taking the email off of your phone, like that's huge. I know for me, like I've definitely like muted things. People put their phone on do not disturb. That's a really good one. And I love that you brought up that idea of urgency because I think that that's like literally how entrepreneurs' brains and bodies are wired is like go, 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 go. What's next? What can I do? And so yeah, just slowing down. And you even mentioned that in the beginning of this episode of like just allowing yourself to slow down in is like a huge piece of embracing and embodying the sober lifestyle. So I love that. Awesome. Well, we can start wrapping things up. I just have two more questions left all about being a 1% woman. So I think the one thing that I've really loved about creating this 1% woman brand is being a 1% woman kind of looks different for every woman. And that's the really cool thing. So I'd love to hear when you think about being a 1% woman, what does that mean to you? And also, how are you embodying being a 1% woman in this season of your life?
Yeah, so I love the name because I think that it's like to me, a 1% woman is somebody who's like elevated, who embodies like really beautiful characteristics on all fronts, like mind, body, soul, spiritually. So when I heard your podcast, I was like, oh my God, I'm like one, like it feels, I kind of felt special. I was like 1% woman. But I think that you know, that a lot of people are driven to like be the best they can be. And so being like in the top 1%, like for me is like an achievement. And that could look different for everyone, but for me, I'm like, I think it's somebody who's like elevated. And what was the second part of the question?
How are you embodying being a 1% woman in this season of your life?
Yeah, I am just like, I am allowing all the hard work and manifestation to shower me with blessings, and I'm allowing it. And I used to not allow it. Like I used to not want good things to happen or people to say, oh, you look nice. I'd be like, oh, okay, whatever, you're lying. Like I like, you know, like
Yeah.
I'm embracing that, and I'm like learning to accept it all and be thankful for it all, and like allowing myself to keep rising to the top until, you know, it's time for me to like slow down. And so I am just like, I said, I'm like, I'm not complaining anymore. I'm busy. I'm like saying thank you, and I'm like gonna just ask for more support. I think we shared that a little bit in the beginning too. Like
Yeah.
I'm manifesting like somebody to help me keep growing this business, not like turning anything away. So I'm like embracing all the busyness, the blessings, and like allowing it to just take me to the next level.
I love that. I think one of the biggest things that women struggle with is this ability to receive and let themselves just like receive, whether it is help from someone else or to receive money or praise or compliments or like, damn, Drew, you are a 1% woman and you're doing a great job. Like something as simple as that, being able to like wear that label for yourself and truly step into those shoes. So that's awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story and being so open and vulnerable. I know that this is going to be such a good topic for other 1% women to just hear and listen to. And so thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I hope
Of
you have a good
course.
day.
You too. Bye.
Bye.